It is being described as a landmark piece of legislation, the Omnibus Bill, combining 15 laws in one to deal with the fallout of a potential no-deal Brexit, published just in the last hour or so by the Taoiseach, Simon Coveney, who joins me now on the line. Taoiseach, good morning to you and thank you for joining us. And you were saying that this, and we heard the clip in the bulletin earlier, this is a lose-lose-lose scenario, a no-deal Brexit for Britain, for Ireland and for the European Union in general. Are we facing a kind of emergency that would be categorised, you know, in the same way as, well, the Second World War was by our grandparents and parents, or indeed more recently by the arrival of the Troika?
Well, look, I mean, I certainly don't think we should compare this to wartime. I think, you know, those comparisons in terms of obviously loss of life and violence aren't appropriate. But certainly this represents potentially a very significant shock to the Irish economy. And we need to prepare for that. We need to make sure that we have protections in place that can limit the damage. There are some sectors in the Irish economy that are potentially very vulnerable because of their reliance on the British market for consumers and customers, particularly the agri-food sector, which, you know, exports 4.8 billion euros worth of food to the UK every year. And if there were to be a no-deal Brexit at the end of next month, and if the UK were to apply full WTO, that's World Trade Organization, trading rules and tariffs to that trade, we would face very significant pressures that the government needs to band for and respond to so that we can protect farm families and we can protect a sector that's hugely important, not just to rural Ireland, actually, but to the Irish economy. So that's the kind of preparation that's underway now, just in case a no-deal Brexit actually happens. And I think it's important to say strongly, for the record, I don't believe a no-deal Brexit will happen, but we have to plan for it just in case. And what we're announcing this morning and publishing this morning is a very large piece of legislation that will try to protect in many ways the status quo that we take for granted and enjoy today. You know, things like the provision of cross-border health care. You know, at the moment there are children coming from Belfast for specialist paediatric care in Dublin. There are many people in Donegal who cross the border into Derry to go to Auchnagalvin Hospital. In fact, we have made capital investments in hospitals in Northern Ireland to facilitate and recognise that cross-border health provision.
And does reciprocal legislation can't continue. But do you have to have reciprocal legislation in the House of Commons?
Yes. So, you know, we have been working with the British government, and I have to say they've been, you know, very helpful on this. So both countries will have to pass legislation to ensure that we protect the rights and privileges that Irish and British citizens have in each other's countries. But it's especially relevant in the context of Northern Ireland, of course. And so, you know, we've had good cooperation with the UK, and while, you know, some of the other negotiations in Brexit have obviously been tense and so on, the cooperation on a bilateral basis in some of these areas has been very close and very strong. And that's why, you know, students in the future will have legislation underpinning their entitlements at the moment to be able to travel out of Ireland, to get a SUSE grant, to go to college in the UK, and of course British students coming to universities and third level institutions here. That's all under what's called the common travel area between Britain and Ireland, that's been there since the 1920s, whereby we effectively have mutual recognition of citizenship in each other's countries that allow us to travel, to work, to study, to access social welfare payments, to take pension entitlements with each as we travel between Britain and Ireland. And we're trying to protect all of those privileges, if you like, in the context of a no-deal Brexit, because, of course, much of that privilege has been reinforced by common EU membership in recent decades.
And Taoiseach, you, in your opening remarks, you were, before you started talking about the detail of this legislation, you made the point that the backstop, and you said this with some emphasis, the backstop will not be jettisoned at the last minute by the European Union. And that seems to be directed primarily at maybe the British audience. It was carried live on Sky, I noticed. And is it your feeling that maybe there are people in the British government trying to go around the back of the scrum in Europe, so to speak, to try to bring about that situation that it would be jettisoned maybe at the last European Council summit in late March?
Well, I mean, I think that may be the hope of some people in Westminster. But I think, as the Taoiseach said, I think last week, anybody who thinks that Ireland will be sacrificed at the last minute here to get a deal is in for an unpleasant surprise, if that's what they think is going to happen. It won't happen. The solidarity is really strong. I was with Michel Barnier on Monday. We had a long meeting, and the EU position is crystal clear. It's been reinforced by President Juncker and President Tusk again this week, that, look, we all want to get a fair deal. We all want to try to provide the reassurance that the British Parliament needs to ratify a deal that its government has already signed up to.
Yes, and that's the message. That message has been going out for many months, if not over the last year to two years, even going back to the time of Brexit. But we note this morning in the Irish Times, Gerry Moriarty reporting Ian Paisley Jr., an MP for North Antrim, saying, look, at the end of the day, Merkel and Macron will say to the Irish, they'll push them aside and they'll say, you've had your fun with all this, now it's time to do the deal. That's what they're expecting.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, with respect, I don't think Ian Paisley Jr. is reflective of the broad view across Westminster.
But he's one of the 10 DUP votes who are keeping Mrs. May in power.
He has a job to do, but he's not central to these negotiations. He is an important vote, of course, in Westminster, and he's part of a party that has 10 very important votes in Westminster. We need to listen to the DUP. We also need to listen to all of the other political parties in Northern Ireland in terms of their anxieties and their concerns. And let's not forget the majority of political parties in Northern Ireland, who represent the majority of people in Northern Ireland, are actually in favour of the backstop as an alternative to a no-deal Brexit. And there are many unionists in the farming community and the business community who've been very clear on that. So I don't believe that Ian Paisley Jr. is reflecting...
Not going to happen, you're saying?
The real discussions that are taking place, to be honest. But look, he has his view and we have to accept that.
You don't have any fear. I mean, it's one thing to have Barnier and Jean-Claude Juncker giving you all these assurances, but when Hardy comes to Hardy, the big players are Merkel and Macron.
Well, look, I mean, you know, we'll have to wait and see. You know, all I can tell you is that we have worked for the last more than 2 years now building a solidarity and an understanding across the European Union as to why Ireland, as an EU state that is committed to and remaining in the European Union, why we are uniquely exposed and vulnerable to a bad outcome from Brexit. And the solidarity around protecting core Irish interests and indeed protecting a peace process and relationships on the island of Ireland, which the EU has been a huge part of in the last 21 years since the Good Friday Agreement, that the solidarity around those issues is strong. Let's not forget that the backstop was a British designed construct as much as an EU.
It was, but Mrs. Merkel has an economy that's in danger of going into recession, and there have been reports in recent times that she's been onto the Taoiseach saying there has to be some bit of movement here.
No, Mrs. Merkel, Chancellor Merkel, has been very clear in terms of EU solidarity. Germany as a country does see itself being the largest economy and largest country in the European Union as a country that needs to lead on solidarity, particularly for smaller countries when there's a vulnerability there. And, you know, my relationship with Heiko Maas, the German foreign minister, is very good and very strong. He's a very impressive individual. But nothing Germany has said would concern me that in any way they are going to undermine the EU position, because it is the EU position, not just the Irish position, and there are many in London who would try to turn this into a bilateral issue, that Dublin is now the obstacle. In fairness, not the British government at the top, but others who would do that. I think what the UK needs to understand is that this is a collective EU position that they are committed to. Yes, they want to provide reassurance. They are happy to change the future relationship declaration if the UK wants to do that. And I think that might be helpful. But the EU is not willing to reopen the text of the withdrawal agreement that includes the Irish Protocol, which protects a whole series of Irish interests and indeed British interests on the island of Ireland, and most importantly, has a backstop, which is the only workable insurance mechanism
You mentioned farm families, Simon Coveney, a few minutes ago, and obviously that's a key consideration in the whole agribusiness and agri-industry. Now, this morning, apparently the European Commission has agreed to change the state aid rules, and that would allow the state to give cash payments up to €25,000 to individual farms hit by Brexit. That would be an increase of up to 66% in what's allowed under state aid. So how important is that?
Well, look, that doesn't surprise me. You know, the European Commission have been incredibly supportive. They understand the vulnerabilities of the Irish agri-food and farming sector. Phil Hogan is the Commissioner for Agriculture. He understands Irish agriculture very well and has done a really good job as a Commissioner. So, you know, we have been working closely with the European Commission to make sure that we prepare for a worst-case scenario just in case it happens. I don't believe it will, but just in case it does. And so one of those measures is to be more flexible in terms of state aid rules in what's called the de minimis rules, which essentially allow member states to support farm families in response to external factors that are outside of their control, which obviously Brexit would be. So, you know, I've said, Michael Creed has said, the Taoiseach has said, you know, Irish agriculture and Irish farming is an essential part of our economy. It's a really important part of rural Ireland and how it functions. And a Fine Gael government, let me be very clear, will never abandon farming in the face of external threats like Brexit.
Now, you say that this legislation is the product of a root and branch trawl of our laws to determine, pardon me, what changes will be needed if the UK becomes a third country overnight. So if it's been that exhaustive, can the public be reassured that you've covered everything here and they don't need to do things like, you know, stockpile everything from medicines to cat food?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it's important to make the distinction between what we can actually legislate for, what we actually can invest in and take actions to try to prevent, which doesn't involve laws, and what the EU has to collectively do together. So our contingency planning involves preparations across all three areas. So what we have published this morning is the legislation that Ireland domestically needs to introduce through the Dáil and Seanad, in the areas where we can legislate ourselves to protect Irish citizens. And that's why, you know, in areas like cross-border healthcare, in areas like protecting students travelling to and from the UK, in areas like a common electricity market on the island of Ireland, in areas like...
I know you were saying that all earlier, like, but I'm just wondering about the basic products on shelves.
But separately to that, we are planning, of course, for other contingency areas. So, for example, in the past, Ireland would have sourced the vast majority of its medicines from the UK. The UK may not be able to certify medicines in the UK any longer because EU certifying bodies like the European Medicines Agency may no longer be able to do that in the UK if it becomes a third country outside of the EU. So we have to change our supply lines and supply chains. The pharmaceutical sector has been planning for that for the last 2 years. The Department of Health and the HSC have also been planning for that. And Simon Harris has confirmed that there is no list of risk medicines that there may be a shortage of in the context of Brexit. But that's because there's been a huge amount of work in place and a lot of contingency planning to ensure that we can make that commitment.
Tánaiste, what about flour? Again, a lot of speculation about that. We import huge amounts of it, our wheat to mill flour. And again, in the event of a no-deal Brexit, could there be shortages there?
Well, I mean, again, you know, what we've been saying to businesses for months now, and I've toured the country, we've held, you know, conferences, public meetings, seminars, reaching out to businesses, particularly in vulnerable sectors like the food sector, to make sure that they are aware of the dangers here, to make sure that they've looked at their supply chains, and if they need to change their suppliers, they need to plan for that. That is happening and has been happening. Bord Bia have done a really good job. The Department of Agriculture have too. Obviously Enterprise Ireland and the IDA are working with their client base as well to make sure that we are preparing. That's why you see reports today of, you know, an agri-food company in Cork getting significant grant aid support from Enterprise Ireland to prepare to diversify the markets that they supply away from the UK in response to Brexit vulnerability.
And what about...
These are the kind of things that are happening on a practical basis now.
Right.
I was in Sligo last night speaking to nearly 300 people, most of them business people, many of them farmers, trying to understand how they should, on a practical level within their own businesses, prepare for a worst-case scenario. Again, you know, we are going to do everything we can to avoid that worst-case scenario, but people have to prepare for it just in case.
Fianna Fáil say you haven't got enough customs officers hired. What's going on?
Well, I saw a report that Michael McGrath made comments. To be honest with you, Michael McGrath made comments last night that were ill-informed. He didn't do his homework and he ran to the microphone to say that revenue said that there'd be more customs officials ready and they're not going to meet their target. It's simply not true, and we clarified it last night. There'll be an extra 409 customs officials ready by the 29th of March. That is enough to do the job. Niall Cody of Revenue actually referred to that figure when he was before an Oireachtas committee.
And said in the event of a no-deal Brexit, the 600 you'd need by the end of the year would need to be brought forward as soon as possible.
Yeah, sorry, Michael McGrath said that, but the Revenue Commissioners aren't saying that. The Revenue Commissioners are saying that they'll have an extra 409 and that will be enough to do the job. They will then supplement that and add more by the end of the year. But the 409 is what was committed to by the end of March, and that's what will be in place.
Okay, Tánaiste to Simon Coveney, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.